Hello, everyone out there. This is Jonathan Fox. As always, I'm here with my brother, Wesley Fox, and this is another episode of Bacon Expressions. Today, we have a bunch of random stuff to talk about, but first, what we're going to talk about is what we're drinking. What are you drinking today, Wes?
Well, I have some Jameson here. I have decided to go, I've kind of rotated away from wine to whiskey, so that's what I got. It's a got it for sale for $24 for a bottle.
So yes.
That is just...
Damn good.
Dude, that is just... I mean, you'd be stupid not to buy Jameson at that price.
Yeah.
Totally worth it. But anyway, that's what I'm starting on here tonight. What are you drinking?
I'm finishing up a bottle of Malbec that I can't really say is that great because it was probably a day or two older than I should have kept it, and I just didn't want to throw it away.
No, you finish wine. You don't. Yeah.
And I'll be moving into, because it's just a glass, I'll probably be moving into like a cupcake Pinot Grigio. And that is only because we had a Friendsgiving a few weeks ago, and there's still some wine left before I get anything new and interesting.
Yeah. What? How did the Friendsgiving go without, you know, not giving too many personal details, but, you know, kind of curious because I haven't done that yet. But I know that's like a thing now in America for people that can't make it home to see their family for Thanksgiving. So they kind of get together on, what was it, Friday, right? Or did you do it? You did it Friday?
Yeah, we did it on Black Friday, I guess. Mm-hmm. I liked it because, you know, I'm at that age where me and my friends where we still like to go out and party, but we're like trying to adult and, you know, kind of get into those shoes. So it was a little bit of both. But me and Jesse did a great job hosting. I felt like we made a bunch of really good food. We took leftovers and reimagined them. So we made like Thanksgiving sliders with ham and then another set of Thanksgiving sliders with turkey. And they were like matched with like side ingredients to kind of complement them. Those were a hit. We did stuffed mushrooms. And probably the best thing is we had a whole tray of stuffing left. And it was our stuffing that we made, which is like, you know, world famous. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. So what we decided to do is put it all, the entire tray of it, through that waffle press that you got us. So we had, I think we all agreed to call them stuffles.
Nice.
But what was awesome is there's so much butter in the stuffing when you make it for Thanksgiving that it just like was perfect and like crispy in the waffle press, and you could dip them in either syrup or gravy, and both were amazingly delicious in just completely different ways. So you just switch back and forth, and then just other things, just cheese and stuff like that out, and then we made this really good bourbon hot apple cider, and it's apple cider made out of those apple crisp apples or whatever, or honey crisp apples. I don't know if you've had them, but they're the best tasting apples in the world. The cider was made out of that, and then it was just like a bullet bourbon, regular straight bourbon. And, I guess it was a hit, you know. But then, of course, since we're all trying to be adults, by around midnight it started to de-evolve, and it was still a blast.
That's amazing. I'm just imagining stuffles with gravy instead of syrup, you know.
No, but you had both, man. You had, both. You could dip them in syrup if you wanted.
That is amazing. That is definitely like a – Well, I need to get friends first before I can have a Friendsgiving, but, you know, I'll get to work on that. I've only been living here for 4 months, so maybe next year.
It's nice because we took leftovers home from everyone, which usually a lot of people offer, but we, you know, a lot of times I don't take leftovers. And so we did this time because if we didn't, we'd have a party that we'd have to go buy groceries for or some shit. So we were really like pushing friends like, yeah, we'll take whatever leftovers you got. So it definitely worked out and we made it through all of them.
Oh, you're talking about like on regular Thanksgiving, you took home a shit ton of leftovers for the Friendsgiving, right?
Yep. And
we
went to two separate Thanksgivings. We went to our aunt's, me and your aunt's, and then Jesse's aunt.
Sweet. That is, dude, that's doing it right. I did a traditional Thanksgiving with our mom and sister in a house with 9 dogs. Because our sister loves to foster dogs, and so that part of it is cool. Part of it gets old pretty fast because of how loud they are and how hairy they are. And then, Friday, Saturday, more visiting family in the Midwest, and then getting stranded in Chicago before finally getting home on, Monday night. after Thanksgiving. So I did it like the traditional way, which has, you know, a lot of the things that you expect from Thanksgiving, seeing family and everything. But I mean, there, it just comes at a cost.
And the like, traditional way is spending a day at O'Hare. That's what it is.
That's really, oh, and they are just, oh, and, you know, they're, I like Midway Airport in Chicago. This is the second airport. I know Midway front to back. I've been through there so many times because I used to fly nothing but Southwest Airlines, and that's where they go out of. And I don't know. I just, to me, like the people at, whether it's the TSA, the ticket agents, everyone at Midway seems to be a little bit nicer and a little bit more human. At O'Hare, like my experience this trip, they were just miserable. All of them are miserable. None of them wanted to do their jobs. They all wanted to be jerks. And it was just, it just reminded me of why I don't like to fly into O'Hare. And,
I mean, because think about it. If you're at Midway Airport, which is pretty much in the city, you know, like if you get, you know, a layover or something like that, you're a train ride away from everything in Chicago. But like when you're in O'Hare, you're just far enough away where you're like, well, I'm not going to go like an hour into the city or something like that. You know, I'll just stay here at the airport.
Yep.
So that's what happens. But if you're at Midway, you're like, man, I could be downtown doing something on the loop within like 15, 20 minutes maybe.
Dude, they have a little bit more than that, but it's probably
It just feels like you're more likely to go do it, essentially. And so like, and O'Hare is just a ridiculous mess. Everybody is upset there because everybody that comes through there is pissed off, so I'm sure their staff has to have thick skin and been like, yeah, you just got to O'Hare, bitch, shit's getting real.
and part of me was like a tiny bit sympathetic for them, because when I know what it's like to fly, like I know what to expect. I know like it's going to be kind of silly and ridiculous. That's the way flying has been for like decades, ever since 9/11, basically. So, but still, people complain and bitch and moan. Like when you're in the gate area, when you're in line for security, they're bitching about things that have been like the norm of air travel for the last 15, 20 years. Like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. This is taking forever. I'm like, I wanted to turn around and be like, where the fuck have you been since 9/11? This is what it's like all the time. This is what it is. Like, this is how flying is in America. And I can imagine when they go by TSA or go by everyone else, I'm sure they're being bitches and assholes to them, too, because they're upset. It's the holidays. They're trying to get to where they're going, and they're getting all worked up about the stress of travel. To me, as a traveler, you have to accept that you're going to go through some bullshit. Like, that's so, just the way it is.
So check it out. Like, I know what you mean about those people that just don't travel a lot and they just can't believe it. But at the same time, I do catch myself saying that at the local Denver TSA, because I travel through it pretty often. And when they're all like, you know, today we're doing this, and they're just like randomly like going like back like 10 years and freaking like, you know, searching and everything. And then the next time I go there, you know, like they're not doing it. And then they don't do it for a while. And then I come back when they're all dicks about doing it. They're like, we always do this. This has always been the rules. Like, no, you guys are bipolar. You guys search it whenever you want. Don't act like every time I come here, I do the exact same thing, because I do not. So please don't treat me like that. Like, oh, you should know. Like, this is how it's always been. It is a crapshoot. It is a roll of the dice, like what we're going to have to do each time. So, you know, don't be offended if you, like, I get it wrong. I know you've been saying it over and over for 8 fucking hours, but I just got here and I didn't know what you're doing fucking today.
Some of the airports, like, when they've introduced the thing where you have to walk by the dog before you go to the scanner or the metal detector. And that saves you a lot of time, because if you do that, you don't have to take your shoes off. You can leave shit in your bag. Like, it's a lot simpler. It goes a lot better. So, but you have to walk by the dog. You can't pet the dog, of course. So there's all these rules, right? And they know it's new. So they're actually being, like, every airport I've been to, they're being very, very cool about that, because they realize, hey, no one's done this before. We've never had to walk by a dog before. And the guy at Seattle, at SeaTac, when I left there on Thursday morning, he was just, like, I don't know how much coffee he had, or maybe he just, like, smoked a big joint. He was just in a great mood. He was almost singing the instructions to people. Like, he's just, like, making jokes. He's, like, telling everyone, just walk to the right, walk to the right, walk to the right, dog to the left, walk to the right. I mean, he's just having way too much fun for a TSA agent. And like that, like that's how I started my trip. I was like, okay, I'm
gonna go through an airport. Well, this is like a classic holiday movie or whatever, yeah. You know? Like everything's going smoothly, and then you know, at some point, the shitstorm, the glass shatters, yeah. The shitstorm starts. Yeah. But I mean, of course, he's happy. He's working with a dog all day. You know, that's awesome.
Yeah, but it's a dog you can't pet. You have to be careful. Like, you can't treat it like a normal dog.
But it's your buddy. It still makes you happy. They're still having a good time.
Yeah.
I'm all about that. I'll walk past the dog. But we're here in Colorado. I'm like, so he obviously is not here to, like, smell weed, you know? Because what if my – you know, but at the same time, it's like
– They don't bother with – the TS – I heard someone say this when they introduced that. They didn't bother training their dogs for weed. So, obviously, in Washington and Colorado and a number of other states that are now legalizing it – it would be a total waste of their time. But also, secondly, yeah. Like letting weed through an airport is low risk compared to what they're trying to stop.
Yeah, so it's really for bomb materials and stuff like that, honestly.
Yeah. So, yep, that was my Thanksgiving, and traveling is going to be a chore if you have to fly no matter what. Just get used to it, and if you happen to go through an airport where like the staff is in a good mood, man, just you know, hey, this is a win. But all right. We should probably move on here to the first item we wanted to talk about, and it's a movie trailer for the new Lion King movie that'll be coming out next year. It is a CGI fest, so it's going to look live action, I guess, as most as you can get. They'll probably have Andy Serkis doing the face of somebody. But it's got everyone freaking out, and you just saw it a few minutes ago, or before we started here. Right, so why don't you share your thoughts, because you just saw it.
All right, so I thought it was cool that they were remaking The Lion King, but I didn't get that excited over it, so I didn't care about the trailer getting dropped. Wes brings this up, I watch the trailer, and I'm freaking the fuck out. It is almost like a shot-for-shot remake, which I know it's all like – they got to make it a little bit different in some way, but the key scenes for the trailer are just like a CGI, almost looks like live-action freaking – but the Lion King cartoon. And then James Earl Jones is still doing the voice of Mufasa, so that's incredible. And then when you see the credits of who's doing all the other voices and who's involved – it was just got insanely exciting. And then I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to relive this childhood thing in a ridiculous way. Like I am so pumped for it. This is.
Yeah. Pre Pixar. This was one of the greatest like animated movies that was ever made. Like before Pixar went on that ridiculous hot streak.
Well, and it was controversial because how much of it was actually made by computers. They didn't really call it CG or CGI or anything like that then, but they're all like, no, but it wasn't all drawn by hand. A lot of computers had to do with it because it was so ridiculously like good. You know, it definitely like took it up a notch, even though it was still stylistic and it wasn't all about realism. It was still just really, really well done animated wise. And just made us all feel so many complex emotions.
And and it was risky at the time because Disney had moved away from talking animals. They were not doing those types of movies for a long time. So then when somebody pitched The Lion King as a major theatrical release, you know, they were worried because they're thinking, well, those are kind of the movies that Disney made decades before, you know, like the cartoons that were talking animals that we loved growing up. A lot of those movies were from the 70s and 80s, and there was a time when Disney was moving away from that, and they're thinking like, no, we can't do that kind of movie anymore. That doesn't really draw people in. So when they were originally pitching The Lion King, like at the time they were skeptical of talking animal movie, and they were also skeptical of the premise because it's basically I mean, you already know where it comes from, right? Lion King is...
It's Hamlet.
It's Hamlet. So they're thinking, how are you...
Well, and I learned that from Bo Burnham, so I'm not going to act like I'm some well-read Shakespeare fan. I obviously, for the most part, can't stand Shakespeare. But ever since I heard that in the song... I mean, maybe now I could that I've gotten older, but I've just like disliked the content or the way that it was spoken so much when I was younger. It's just turned off. I feel like it's overrated.
Oh, it's I have a hard time consuming.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not. I mean, because I just don't know how to consume it and enjoy it. You know,
he was basically the all right. Let's not go on a Shakespeare tangent.
I think that's too far. But Lion King. Is,
anyway, yeah, it is Hamlet. It's so cool. Yeah, and if you don't believe us, go read a Cliff Notes or a Wikipedia summary of Hamlet, and then and then think about Lion King. That's what you're going to get. But, like, it had, and it's kind of surprising, but when they did green light it, they definitely gave it the star power it needed for the voices. I mean, you already mentioned James Earl Jones. It had Jeremy Irons.
JTT.
I mean, yes. And what was the, oh, yeah, the Timon and Pumbaa, Billy Crystal and Dom DeLuise? Shit, I might have that wrong.
Yeah, who did Pumbaa?
I mean, the music, of course, the music's classic. I mean, that's Billy Joel and Elton John. So, I mean, that's the
music,
other thing.
The music is freaking fantastic. We had the CD. We had every word memorized, and we weren't even that into cartoons at that time anymore. There was just something that was just so legit about it. And it was, you know, you only have a handful of CDs when you're a kid and stuff, so you're like, we're going to do this.
Oh, Mr. Bean was Zazu. Rowan Atkinson. So.
Oh, yeah, and Whoopi Goldberg and.
Whoopi Goldberg, Cheech Marin.
Yeah, Cheech. Like, come on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Nathan Lane. Shit.
Yeah, you said Billy Crystal. Yeah, I know that didn't seem right. Nathan Lane, come on.
And then Pumbaa. Ernie Sabella. Okay, I had that wrong, too. Yeah, it's Nathan Lane. It wasn't Billy Crystal.
Who's Ernie Sabella?
I don't know.
Voice actor, maybe?
Let's see.
More of...
Yeah, he did a lot of... it looks like Pumbaa was like his claim to fame, because almost everything here is Pumbaa and Lion King related. So, yeah, he's a voice actor. He's a... let's see. Rafiki was Robert Guillaume. I don't know who that is. I probably should. But yeah, like Matthew Broderick is Simba's voice.
But, well, that's adult. That's adult Simba.
Yeah, that's adult Simba.
Taylor Thomas. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Whose claim to fame was the middle child in Home Improvement and all those other movies he made where he wasn't quite so good. But yeah, I mean, this movie is 1994. Like, it's just an insane, it's just a classic, just one of the great movies. So for them to remake it live action, and I shared with you the meme of they're just showing the people's reaction to the trailers, and the kids and millennials are getting excited, and their parents are just like, really upset and start pointing at them like, this is not for you. This is our movie.
And we're not taking you to see this.
No.
You get to watch this on demand.
This is not your movie. This is a movie for mommy and daddy. We're bringing you along to watch our movie. Don't try to pretend this is for you. Because this movie, I mean, this movie made a shit ton of money in 94. A ton of money. I think it was... At the time, the highest grossing animated movie of all time. I mean, at the time, it broke all the records. I'm pretty sure Pixar has blown it out of the water. But, like, so, like, for them to do a remake, for them to, like, put as much as they're putting into, and it's just the right time to do a remake. It's been about 24 years. To me, that's a sufficient amount of time to do a remake or a reboot of anything. You got to give it some time and introduce it to a new generation. And, I mean, this is cool. I think this is a great... I hope they do it right. I hope it's everything I imagine it is. And I just think it's totally... I'm wondering if I'm going to cry when Mufasa dies. Spoiler alert.
I don't know. I think there's going to be other musical moments that are going to make me emotional just because of the strong connection with the music. Like you said, Elton John, Billy Joel, how amazing just the music is. And I feel like that's what like kind of sucks me back a lot of times. But, like, the Mufasa dying, I feel like I've seen it enough times. It's probably not going to happen, but it might just be like that meme that you showed me where I just tell myself I'm an adult, I can handle it, and something else happens.
I'll put that in the show notes. But, yeah, there's a meme that people use for all sorts of, like, movies that, when they were kids that made them cry. And then, yeah, basically you'll see it. It's a man, like, looking in the mirror like, I'm a grown-ass man. I can do this. Then they watch a movie from their childhood and start crying like a child. I mean, it's just, like, I love it. I mean, I think it's like one of the, I don't know, I have a lot of time on my hands, so I see a lot of these things, and just, that's one of my favorites. I just think it's like perfectly encapsulates a lot of us from the 90s that are, or maybe even some millennials as well. Like, we think we're adults, but we're really not. In a lot of ways. We didn't grow up the way the previous generation did. We're still, in a lot of ways, giant children. And I just love things that kind of exploit that for fun.
I mean, Jesse brought up a good point the other day. We saw this old guy on a mountain bike that was riding it around the city like those extreme mountain bikers that'll like stall their mountain bike and just have it on one wheel and then like jumping up on like different stuff like around the city, around this bridge by the Cherry Creek and stuff. And like, and it didn't even look like a super in shape old dude, even though it was an old dude that could do it and stuff. And it's like, man, first of all, I love that about Colorado and Denver. You don't have to grow up here. Adults get to live in a perpetual state of childhood, and not just of our generation. The previous generation is all about that too. There's a lot of baby boomers here that decided never to grow up. So that's very cool. But she just brought up the point. It's like, you know, honestly, if you don't want to grow up, if you don't ever feel like doing it, you never really have to. Like, yeah, you could have a job and this and that, but the way that you, like, live your life and what you do for fun and how you choose to, like, act and stuff, like, you could be a kid for the rest of life if you want. Your body just gets older.
Yeah.
And I thought that it's, even though it's super simple, like, I was all about it.
Yeah, so it's – I think it's just kind of an attitude thing. It's not that, you know, people that are older don't take care of things like pay bills and well, some of them don't, but like a lot of them are highly productive people. Like if you look at, hey, go through all the statistics, you'll find, I'm sure that most, we have a part of our lives where we're definitely doing the things our older generations have done. But like in the way we interact with each other, the way we act in the movies we watch and a lot, we definitely do not have that kind of same kind of, quiet, gentlemanly kind of dignity, or you know, a lady.
Dignity,
you know,
dignity is not required.
No,
we're just being an adult for millennials and stuff. You don't have to have dignity. If anything, if you have too much dignity, you're like, look at this fucking asshole over here. Takes himself so fucking seriously. He is the worst.
Yeah, like the manner, like the books on manners and etiquette from the 50s and 60s, like have basically been all destroyed. Like we don't even.
I mean, it's nice. It's nice to be able to do it. And I feel like it's really good to be able to turn it on. But I think it's just refreshing that you don't have to live like that all the time. Because I definitely like being able to go to a nice place and dress nice and, like, you know, be proper and everything. But at some point, like, the small talk is not going to be polite the whole time.
No, definitely not. And
I just know the basic manners to get through it and stuff and have a good experience. But
yeah, and I have a job, and I guess this is very common in the Seattle area, where the dress code is virtually non-existent. I mean, I have people that show up to my office in shorts and a Star Wars shirt, like that.
What?
Yeah, that happens. Like, they're. I mean, for one thing, we do have the manufacturing floor on the first floor, but you have to wear like a green anti-static jacket, whatever. But even up in the offices, like a lot of people just show up. Whenever, whatever. Well, not whenever. I mean, they got to show up by 9, but like if they want to like show up at 7 and leave at 3, they can. You know, there's a flex, and then there's also the dress code's non-existent. And I've been told that like most of Seattle is the same way. That the culturally, like we're more west. It's more of a West Coast culture where the idea of dress codes and this kind of business professional attitude that is more East Coast in nature is seen as kind of you know, status obsessed, you know, and things like that. And I just love it. Like I came in fully dressed for my first day at work, and I had two people tell me, "You overdressed." So
it's similar in Colorado because I don't know, if you're dressed up in a full suit and everything, you're weird. You stand out. There's only a few places you could be dressed like that, and it's not weird. I was in court in a mountain town and had a public defender that showed up in jeans and a corduroy blazer. I am not kidding.
I don't know why I find that so amusing. Maybe it's because I went to law school, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I just think that's...
Well, I was upset about it because it wasn't my original public defender that I've been talking to. It's like, no, they're having someone else cover you. And then some guy in jeans and a corduroy blazer shows up. I'm like, fuck. I mean, I already got comfortable with my public defender, and I knew I was skating by.
So,
anyway, and then I get her ringer or her freaking bench warmer. Fuck. It didn't matter though. Like this is a small mountain town. The courthouse was the jail, was the police station, was the probation office, was the court clerk, it was everything all in one. It was like a whole downtown's worth of civic buildings all in one elementary school size building.
Yeah, it's probably a county where like if you can get elected to the city council and sheriff and and to be a judge, like, all in the same time, because they just don't have enough people to fill all the roles.
Oh, it was great. It was great. The snowboarding bum guy came up, and he's literally wearing, like, you know those big winter hats with the flaps on them on the side, yep. The ear flaps?
Yep.
He's literally wearing, like, his pants sagging and, like, a big, like, flannel buttoned up and everything with one of those hats on when he goes to talk to the judge. And the judge doesn't even tell him to take his hat off, but he definitely acknowledges, like, how casual this guy is, like, with his body language. And he's like, all right, let's do this. And then he's all like, so do you have this with you? He's like, oh, no, I left that at home. And the judge is like, how far do you live? First of all, like, why are you asking that question? And then he's like, 20 minutes. It's like, all right, we're going to be here for a while. Like, you go back and get it if you want. And I'm like, whoa! The judge is saying, like, just if you could run back here. I was like, I didn't drive here. I got dropped off. And then I was going to, he's like, all right, well, I guess if you go to the clerk, they'll print you out another one or something. You have to pay for it or whatever. And then we'll just wait and do it. And he's like, okay. And then just really ditzily, like a stoner and stuff, gets directed on where to do it, comes back with the paperwork, looks over at the prosecutor, you know, the DA or whatever, and he's like, do you have a pen? To help him fill out the paperwork for, like, the crime the guy's trying to, like, prosecute against him with. And he just looked at him with this dumbfounded face of, like, how stupid this guy was. And he goes, no, I'm not giving you a pen. Like, of course he had a pen. He was there prepared for court. And I'm just back there cracking up. And it's like, I wasn't there for a big deal. It was like a traffic thing and stuff, you know, like I was still fighting it, but it was really hilarious. And it's like this small town, it was like a mixture of like small rural but also like very Colorado relaxed. Like, I swear, like, the judge is like, as soon as this is done, he's going fishing every single day. Every day he's got his fishing stuff on under his robe. Sometimes it felt like, because I had to go up there a bunch, it felt like he was going to pull an acoustic guitar at the end, like while you waited between the next thing. It's like, all right, well, he could go grab his paperwork. I got this guitar. I'll take requests. Who wants to hear what? I mostly know Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, I was going to say Jimmy Buffett. That's exactly what I was about to say. He's going to play Jimmy Buffett.
But yeah, so Colorado's weird like that too a little bit. You know, I like to dress up at work for a while, and then it got like tiring, and then they changed it to what they called a smart casual dress code. Pretty much means we could wear jeans every single day. And when I first started working there, I'd laugh at that. It's like, why does everyone want to wear jeans to work all the time? Like, it's not that hard to, like, dress up. And you just kind of lose steam after a while, and you're all like, nah, jeans every day sounds awesome. Yeah, let's do that.
I was just thinking, like, where we grew up in Illinois, like, if you – it's one thing to forget something at home. If you forgot something in the car, they would not let you go back and get it. They'd be like, you're supposed to bring it here. No. Denied. Like, no, it's in the car. It's in the parking lot. I'll be back in 5 minutes. No. You're supposed to – I mean, that's how, like, fascist they are, like, in most Midwestern, probably East Coast courts too. I don't know. I've never been in one. But, like, when you say, like, oh, I left it at home. Oh. Well, how far do you live? Like, that's not a question.
This was
that's not a judge question.
This is in Leadville, Colorado, where four buildings over is where, like, Doc Holliday killed his last man before he died of tuberculosis. And that's where he used to go hide out and shit. So, like, he's, like, 2 miles high and stuff. Like, yeah. You get to play on this beat-up pool table at this old tavern that's from the 1800s that Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp and all used to be at. And the pool table's impossible to play on, and it's haunted. Yeah. But you got to play a game on it.
Well, I mean, whoever he shot probably had it coming. But so.
Well, I think he killed probably more people in that town, but that, like, it's still, like, the same building is standing where technically the last person he shot was.
That's,
so
that's,
I'm sure there's more history of what they did there because he used to hide out there all the time. So I'm sure he had to kill other people that, like, rolled up on him.
All right, so real quick, you've seen the movie Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner?
Yeah, of course.
And you've seen Tombstone with mm-hmm. All right, mm-hmm. Which Doc Holliday did you like better? Did you like Val Kilmer's Doc Holliday or Dennis Quaid's?
Ooh. They were both awesome.
I know.
But, all right. This is kind of like a Star Trek thing, you know?
Yes it is.
Wyatt Earp is a better movie, but I don't know, maybe Val Kilmer was the better Doc? Fuck, I don't know. That's tough. Now that I'm saying that out loud, that feels ridiculous. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to rewatch him.
Yeah.
And that's a punishing assignment, though. That's at least 5 hours
of work. Dude, Wyatt Earp is a journey. Man, I lean, as of today, right now, having seen neither movie in the last few years, I lean a little bit Val Kilmer, but it's not an easy choice. And I don't like Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid's Doc Holliday.
He did a great job at that. You know what I'm gonna have to do is I'm gonna have to figure out which movie had the best Doc Holliday one-liners, because they both had a bunch of really good one-liners. Right, he was just a hilarious side character.
One of the great scenes is when they're in that casino. And that one guy's like showing off with his gun, like flipping it around like crazy. And Val Kilmer's Doc Holliday takes a coffee cup or whatever, and starts like flinging it around like it's a gun, like just taunting him and everything. Because like everyone there is afraid of Doc Holliday because he's like the biggest like killer there, and he's like on the side of the law for some reason.
Yeah. But, what an interesting time in America.
It's just casinos, whorehouses, and gunfights. That's no wonder Red Dead Redemption 2 is so popular, which I did start playing the other night, but that's a different story. So I don't know.
That's probably more on topic with the shows are supposed to be about, like fan stuff. But we kind of derailed that. Oh, I think we do have an update.
Yes.
Oumuamua update. So.
Dun-dun-dun. All right, go ahead.
The update, and this is cigar-shaped celestial body that is going through the solar system from another solar system. It's 10 times longer than it is wide, and it is apparently 10 times shinier than other objects of its kind, and it's moving faster than anything we've ever seen go through our solar system. Not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens. But another SETI search across it comes up empty. So... you know, we haven't heard any radio stuff. There's nothing coming from it. So that's the update. Essentially, it's an update that there's no update.
It's a derelict warship. That's what it is. It might be Klingon. It might be whatever those aliens were in Star Wars that clicked and flew around and made the Death Star or whatever.
I'm like, telling you, who knows? Like, think about it. You know, like when you see these space battles and ships get blown up, but they're not completely blown up and they spin off, 1,000 years later, they go somewhere, you know?
Yeah, shit just keeps flying around. Yeah, and it doesn't, like, break down or collapse or disintegrate because there's no resistance as it flies. Yeah. Like, they were showing, there's a TV show which I do not recommend, but it did have a scene. It's called Defiance. It was on Sci-Fi. It's not a terrible show, but it is like it probably would have done really well in the 90s, but since it came out in 2007, 2008, it was like maybe 10 years past its time. Anyway, it's a bunch of humanoid aliens living on Earth after this huge battle took place that completely reshaped the planet. So there's still humans around, no one's really in control of Earth anymore. And in the atmosphere are the remains of all the ships that fought this great battle over Earth. And they're still up there because they're still in orbit, just like all our space junk is still in orbit, you know, from the Apollo program. Like all these warships and all these massive things that were up there fighting this battle over the Earth and the solar system are floating up there. And periodically they'll like get caught in the atmosphere and fall to Earth. And everyone runs over trying to collect the artifacts and technology. And it was really cool.
So the people on Earth at this point are less advanced?
They don't have the means to get up there to collect it. So there's no space travel. They're all stuck on Earth. It's basically like Serenity without, like, no one has a spaceship. Like, the only people that have spaceships are only, like, the most wealthiest and some of the alien species, and they do not share their technology with the common people. So everyone else is like,
Earth. So the common people are scavenging. It's not that all of humanity has to scavenge.
No, and it's not just humanity scavenging. There's like four other major alien races, all humanoid, you know, kind of like Star Trek alien races all living together, including this one really pale silver-haired species that has like no hang-ups about nudity. And they're very interesting. Like, the characters are weird. I mean, they're all like kind of hedonists, and I don't know what they're supposed to be a stand-in for. But like, they, you combine that with like these big bulking looking ape looking aliens, and then you have this other type. So there's, and humans. And so they're all living on Earth together after this great war. And like the remains, like the battlefield remains, are floating over the planet and periodically falling to Earth. And you just, it's like I said, the show is, you know, there's some cool stuff in it, but for the most part, I don't recommend it. It's just, it's too much of something from the old era of sci-fi. I think,
but there were some cool concepts, though.
Yeah, it's just, I think for a modern sci-fi, like somebody who's like grown up now, like and has watched a lot of the new sci-fi in the last 10 years, I think you'd probably be mildly insulted by some of the things you'd see in this show, because it's kind of like, you know, what you would see like from Kirk's Star Trek, you know, like aliens basically are humans mm-hmm. with silver skin. That's all they are.
Yeah. So yeah, that is a little annoying.
But anyway, that was like a cool thing about it, because they said, well, it's all still up there. Where's it going to go? Like, it's not, if you have a battle in space, nothing decomposes, nothing breaks down. It's just going to float around. And especially if you blow something up, the debris is going to keep flying at the same velocity in that direction forever until it gets caught in a gravity well. So when we say that we think Oumuamua, when I say I think Oumuamua might be debris or a derelict ship from a battle that took place somewhere else, I'm seriously putting that forward as a legitimate theory, that this thing is a battleship that got blown up. It's like everyone on board's dead, and the remains are just flying away from the battlefield and just happen to fly through our solar system. So that is my current theory on what Oumuamua is. Prove me wrong.
I you know, scientists are trying to prove that wrong. There's, I mean, I know it's cool that we're studying it for a lot of reasons, you know, because there's a lot of furs associated with it regardless of this. So it's the whole scientific community and the whole, you know, astronomy community can justify spending time on this for really important projects. But we are all kind of thinking like, what if? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't, you know, because it's tumbling through space, it doesn't really seem like it's operational. And maybe if it was, it would be like cloaked, or it would come about in a different way than the way that it is. But what if it is like some freaking lost relic of a different civilization? And the concept of us finding and, you know, making first contact might not, you know, be with the civilization that still exists. It might just be a long extinct, you know, species or something like that. Or we come across something that's in its infancy, mm-hmm. you know, microbial life or something like it. I mean, it'd be cool if it was like something like around the same level as us, just a little bit more advanced. I mean, they'd probably take us over. They'd have to be a lot more advanced not to want to kill us.
Yeah.
Cause we're the worst. We would think about how to kill them.
Yeah. We're either dealing with space amoebas or we're dealing with a long dead race. It's more likely to run across that than we are somebody of our equal technological capability. That's definitely odds. I mean, statistically speaking, those are the odds. We're not dealing with somebody.
Also the remnants too, because the first things that we send out anywhere are going to be probes. We're going to have probes in other star systems well before we send any of our own people. So not just finding relics, but just finding, it could be relics of an actual probe trying to reach us or some shit. Not this, something this big. That's too big for a probe, I feel like.
Well, if they found like the Voyager, for example, like the thing that's now like officially exited the solar system, the technology they would find there is 50 years, like it's already obsolete onto what we have now. So whenever somebody finds it.
But by the time it reaches anyone, like our star's probably already going to be exploded at the speed that it's going before it reaches another star system, even if it's pointed in the direction where it would ever hit any of the nearest star systems. You know, it's probably after our star would explode. I don't know if the math is there, but I could probably fuck with it for a little bit and see if that's true.
Yeah, it's more likely. I think I don't know like if you could probably find this answer if it is actually heading towards somewhere, but my guess is it's going to like fly past a bunch of star systems before it gets anywhere near a planet. For like 500,000 to a million years. So it's
this thing could have been traveling so long that its star system is already blown up and it has supernova.
Yeah, the battle that it got destroyed in probably took place like, you know, 10 million years ago.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Think of that.
10 million. Dude, it's from a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Wow.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
Moving on.
Well, the other thing that's, well, this is not news, but this is something that happened to me that I wanted to share because it is my belief that the greatest entertainer of all time, American, I'll say that, the greatest entertainer in pop culture was Michael Jackson. And I think a lot of people feel like that's not really a controversial thing to say. But his voice, his dancing skills, his production values, the things he did on stage, the music videos, yes, like things got really weird later on, but it is undeniable the impact he's had on pop culture and on pop music. He's the king of pop and, you know, and an insanely talented man. And this, and I don't watch talent shows like The Voice or, you know, any things like that, but I came across this thing. Somebody put it on either Facebook or 9Gag of this guy in Romania who's on like the Romanian version of The Voice doing Earth Song. And I'll put the link in the show notes. He's doing his rendition of the song, and it is. I have never heard somebody hit or have that sweet of a voice. That was not a woman. Like women, some women and some younger women and young boys can usually like hit some of the notes that Michael mm-hmm. can. This was a grown man doing Earth Song, and he did it so well. That all four judges, you know, they have that button in front of them to turn around their chair when they want to see who's singing. So that way, you know, you're not judging based on looks. All four of them hit the button within 5 seconds because his voice was – and they made him do it again. So if you watch it, he does the song, you know, like a two-minute song like normally he does. And then, like, after they're done talking to him and everything, they ask him to do the song again. And his name is I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'll put it in the show. But Bogdan Ion, Bogdan Ion. And it's The Voice Romania. If you want to find this, go to YouTube and just do The Voice Michael Jackson Earth Song, and it'll be the top result. But it is one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. I have never heard somebody do Michael Jackson the way this guy did it. And it was like it almost brought me to tears. Because as weird as Michael Jackson's story became, his music is just without a doubt to me is almost immortal. And as Dave Chappelle said, you know, he made Thriller, man. So
my when you brought that up to me, I immediately thought like I'm not really on social media anymore, but. When I was on, there'd be a lot of stuff that'd make you feel all sorts of different ways, but something that could make me stop in the middle of no matter what type of day and really feel something and almost like tear up and have to be like, what's happening? Is when you see one of these shows like The Voice or, you know, America's Got Talent or Romania's Got Talent, all these shows where somebody for the first time is getting an audience and gets a standing ovation and just has a ridiculous performance and their reaction. And just, I don't know, from having a music background and just loving the arts and also just like, you know, a lot of times there's stories of people that were bullied or not accepted or nobody liked what they did. And then they just get some ridiculous response and just, you know, just validity for yeah. what their life's pursuit and their passion is in front of everyone, even if it never goes anywhere else. Like you had that moment that's still just every time, no matter what type of day I'm having, it's like, wow, I'm getting really emotional right now. And I don't even know any of these people. This isn't even what country is this even from?
I know you can't like, you don't understand.
Even matter. It's just universal.
Yeah. And I remember I've watched Susan Boyle's first audition on is it Britain's Got Talent? Yeah, mm-hmm. I think she did Britain's Got – well, obviously she did. She's from England. But that Simon Cowell was one of the judges. So, like, he does America and Britain. So she does the song from Les Miserables, I Dreamed a Dream, mm-hmm. which is not an easy song to do at all. And she gets up there and she's talking about how she wants to be the next big pop star. And the crowd is laughing at her. I mean, they're just like, oh, this is going to be another one of those, like, kind of, you know, joke auditions. And she just nails it beautifully. and just the whole crowd. Like, I just watch that all the time because I just think it's the coolest thing. Because everyone in the crowd is like probably like half her age, and they're like, oh, she thinks she's gonna be a pop star. Whatever. Look at this weird looking woman. And then like she has a voice that like no, like very very few people on the planet can match. And it was just, it was cool. This one is the, kind of the same thing where he just looks like a regular guy. Like, there's nothing about him. And then he starts singing, and you're like, where the fuck is that sound coming from? And you know what? Actually, if you go back to, like, Susan Boyle, we mentioned, but also Alex De Leon, who was on... I'm going to look it up right now. But this is another thing for people to look up, like, later on. But he does opera. And he was on America's Got Talent, I think. And yeah, this is the show where like it's like I wanted to show, so I'll put some of these in the show notes. The Andrew De Leon, the Bulldon Eon, and the one you just shared, the Weeknd and Daft Punk. But those are like things that
one's kind of off topic. I was just kind of, we were talking about Michael Jackson.
It's nostalgic. And, it's kind of like it kind of just makes you think of a time when things were simpler.
So the one that I shared, I'll just talk about really briefly. It's The Weeknd, which is arguably the best R&B artist to come out in the past decade. Amazingly talented, used to write hits for all the stars and for all the big, you know, hitters, and now this is him. And he's fantastic, and he actually has range pretty much like Michael Jackson. He could really fucking sell it. He sounds just like him, but he doesn't pretend to, but he knows he can't. So that's not what his act is about, but if you're, you know, you probably know The Weeknd if you don't. I haven't been living under a rock. My brother doesn't. I have to bring all this shit up. And then there is Daft Punk, which has been, you know, a huge international hit since 1995. And they're just amazing. They have a great retro sound. And they made a track that sounded like an early 80s, late 70s Michael Jackson track, with The Weeknd singing a song written and sung and performed like you'd swear he's covering a Michael Jackson song. And then the music video is shot like a classic old late 70s sci-fi, like, you know, the whole set and the background and the special effects and everything is just so true to like that era. Everything down to the video editing and the transitions and everything is just extremely true to the era. It's got to be one of the coolest single videos for me to come out like that as a mainstream hit in a really long time. So I highly suggest watching it. So much awesome happening at once.
As soon as I was watching it, like his outfit, the layout, the scene, like everything just reminded me of Michael Jackson and his voice, of course. And then even with, you know, with the girl he's singing to turning into stone and the snakes. I mean, every little bit of it is like, dude, this could totally have been a Michael Jackson music video. Everything about it.
Like, everyone probably involved with the project is all like, this is awesome. We just get to do this. Like, can we get Quincy Jones and Bruce Swedeen in here?
Oh, man, that was very cool. Those things kind of like, when I start watching YouTube, just screwing around a little bit, like you start watching these music things and yeah, they'll start making you tear up a little bit. And then like we were mentioning before with the internet meme, it's like, you're a grown ass man, you're not going to cry. And then you like listen to it or watch this movie from your childhood and you're just like, not cry. I still think of that scene from Wayne's World 2 where he's stopping by a gas station looking for directions to that church.
Yes.
And the first guest attendant is like a terrible actor, and Mike Myers just kind of looks at the camera, breaks the fourth wall. He's like, look, I know it's a small part, but can't we do better? So they replace him with Charlton Heston. So Charlton Heston comes in as the guest attendant, and he's like, oh, I once knew a girl on Morgan Street. And then he just goes into his, you know, Charlton Heston thing. And when he's done, you know, Myers is just like, thank you. Like, he's trying not to cry. I always think of that.
I do too. There are like some, it's like when you grow up with those things as your reference points and everything, like as you experience those things, like you experience it through like pretty much, you know, quoting Wayne's World, unfortunately. Yeah. that's my go-to as well when I'm trying to like choke up. And then since I'm quoting that, I'm usually able to make myself laugh a little bit, which also helps me from not crying as hard.
Yeah. It does. So
it serves a lot of purposes. There's a reason why I've taken it out of my childhood into my adult life.
Yeah, we...
you're done crying.
I'm not crying.
You have to go stop this wedding. So, I mean, those videos are always going to be awesome to me, and there's nothing like, I mean, just someone really just wowing a crowd and getting them off their feet for the first time when they've never experienced that before. And even though sometimes these shows could be just for ratings and they don't get the best contracts and everything like that, there is still something that's pretty amazing and special about them. Because before this, there was a big gap, and then before that, there was Star Search, and that was pretty whack.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the judges and the crowd ham it up sometimes, and you kind of get wrapped up in it. But then when you listen to it, like without seeing their response, like it's not quite as powerful. So, like, you know, in some of these videos, you'll see like the judges are responding like in this really histrionic way. With the exception of Simon Cowell, but like they're all
and that's the best part is that we all got introduced to this with Simon, and whenever I see a video where Simon is really taken back, that makes me cry.
Yeah,
and there's a few where Simon actually gets teary, and like if Simon like has like one tear shed, I've already been crying for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, the other one I can remember is Chris Daughtry doing "Walk the Line" by Johnny Cash, a long time ago. It's an older one. I don't watch the show, so like my memories of these things are basically YouTube after the fact.
I completely come across them when like people have just shared them a million times. I do not watch any of these shows, like other than just like following these videos and just knowing the characters from pop culture and stuff and what kind of judges they are, because you kind of can't escape it. But these videos, especially ones from obscure countries, when I say obscure, I mean non-English speaking. Like there's Britain's Got Talent. I think we watch a lot of those, and then America's Got Talent, and then we're just this big void of American ignorance, except for the internet. And subtitles.
Thank God for the internet. You know, I've learned it's stupid because I do read the news, but I learned about the protests in France from internet jokes. So they're talking about the yellow vest protests, and I thought that was a joke at first, and then I saw pictures. I'm like, oh shit, this is a real thing. So then I started doing some research to find out what it was about. But like, I feel kind of dumb because you know I'm a dumb American, and I'm like, why? Wait, yellow vest, what the fuck is that about? And it's like a new gas tax or whatever. And like, it's a real thing. Like there's actual protests in France. Like there's fires being set, like they're attacking cops. Like this is like a really like serious event in French culture or like French, in France right now. I won't say French history because this is probably going to be forgotten in a year or two, but like right now, like this is dominating, like, what everyone in France is thinking about at this moment. But of course in America we have no idea, and I didn't have an idea even though I read international news. And like, it's just stuff like that, like small stuff that like in the end, probably in the long, like in the big picture, doesn't really mean a whole lot, but it just kind of reminds you that like there's a lot of shit happening like in other countries where they don't really they know who Donald Trump is, but it's not their president, and the shit that goes on over here they don't really care about. And, like, they have their own, like, kind of weird shit going on. So when I see, like, jokes...
They got their own weird shit going on.
Oh, dude. You want to see... Dude, Europe has some... Like, there's all sorts of videos, like, of straight-up fist fights on the floors of Parliament.
I love them, man. And in Eastern Europe and stuff, it gets crazy.
Dude, they're hammered.
In the Balkans. Yeah.
Dude, they'll say, like, dude, they serve booze, like, at the, like, the Eastern European parliaments. Like, they're fucking hammered when they're getting in fights. So, like, and then Africa, it's even, like, more random stuff, like the Ugandan parliament, when there's a fight there, like, you just watch this shit, like, you kind of laugh, but then you're just kind of like, yeah, but Donald Trump's our president.
and he kind of almost would be down to incite some of that stuff. Like, yeah, punch him on the way out.
Yeah, he won't do it, but he'll encourage other people to do it.
It's like, or he knocked out a member of the press. Awesome.
All right, well, we're not in and out because we took a few minutes out to share videos, but we're getting close to an hour here, so I figured, I don't know, like, I wanted to share a little bit about what I've been watching lately. I know we've both watched Deadpool 2 at the same time, which is hilarious, But we probably don't have enough time for a review or anything. But I didn't want to ask, like, have you watched any of The Punisher on Netflix by chance?
No.
All right. So,
no, is it good? Is it worth watching?
This, all right. See, this is the thing, because I was at our brother Mark's house in Wisconsin. He, you know, we decided to watch it. It got really high ratings, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. I don't watch Marvel TV shows. I don't think I'm not interested. And Punisher is a character that is more of like, I don't know, more of a joke to me. I just don't think they can do it right. So I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever. You know, we've had a few drinks. We made homemade pizza. Yeah, whatever. Let's just watch some Netflix and chill after Deadpool. And watch The Punisher, which has the guy who plays The Punisher was on Walking Dead. So he's a, I know him. And so I was like, all right, I remember him. He was Shane on Walking Dead. No, cool guy. Dude, it's actually really, really good and very serious. And I'm only about 4 or 5 episodes in, so I'm behind. I'm not like, I just, you know, I'm finding this late. So it's not like I'm ahead of the curve or anything, but it definitely delves into like kind of the nature of like PTSD for former soldiers. You know, kind of the law, of course, Punisher loses his family. That's part of his character. It's actually a really fucking good show. Like really, really well done show. I was really, I was impressed. Like
I'm totally down. Like I always liked the character. Everybody always likes that. That one goes along with like Venom, where people don't really know the history or anything about the character, but they like it because the image looks so cool and they can wear it on stuff and it makes them look cool.
Yes.
And the Punisher has always kind of served that, but like his actual story is really awesome, but it's never really been done amazingly, you know, like I felt like who should have done Punisher is like who, you know, did the, you know, like Christopher Nolan or something like that,
yeah.
Or like who did Spawn, you know, like it's so dark, or like, you know, like Frank Miller or something's version of fucking Punisher or something like that, or that kind of stylistic movie. If it's ever going to be on the screen, it's rarely been given justice, you know, because it's pretty weird and dark and gritty, and like there's not really a supernatural element to it, is there?
No. No, he's
now. Doesn't it live in a supernatural universe though? At some point, doesn't it connect?
So far, there's been no reference to the rest of the Marvel universe. So far, it's just been regular people, regular lives, and maybe like the military part of it. You know, like the policy part of it. They haven't really gotten into. So maybe in the later seasons, it will get into the more. You know, maybe they will start connecting. But so far, it's just been about Punisher and about like the characters immediately around him and. I gotta say, Marvel. I mean, first of all, this is full on adult. This is like R rated like content. Not just violence, but just the issues. I mean, it's about it's about PTSD from soldiers coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq. Also, I mean, he's dealing with his own loss of his family, and you know, kind of corruption with people that are that still believe in like the U.S. government and the FBI and. You know, justice and everything, and they're kind of seeing this thing, this ugly thing emerge, and it's done in a very, very well done way. Just really, this is not like superhero, like typical Marvel, like young adult, like, you know, WB kind of shit, like Smallville, you know, that's what I was expecting. Yeah. Something like Smallville, like, oh, this is going to be like Netflix is going to try their hand at all these Marvel properties and. Punisher was always
most
one
of the ones I haven't
up.
Been able to watch or get sucked into, and I see clips of or whatever, and it's like our previews, and it's like I'm not going to watch The Flash, I'm not going to watch, I'm not going to watch the what else
Agents
comes up
of
a
Shield.
Lot of my yeah, I mean it's just not. I tried. I watched the first episode. I know you can't judge it, but the pilot, but I did, and I just couldn't. And I'm just not that into all the whole comic book storylines. But when you take those storylines and you go completely R-rated with it, that's always interesting.
Oh, it is. Yeah, Punish, 4 episodes in, and like all of it, like the next day, all of us were like, you know, I just wanted to watch a TV show while we drank beer and ate pizza. We weren't really looking to get sucked in. We ended up watching it all the way to 12:30 at night, which, you know, for us old folk was a big deal.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like I was still watching the next day. Like we're having coffee, just sitting there. Like, dude, that was really, really good. Like that wasn't like it really. I mean, it took everything seriously. Like the drama. Like normally, like when they do Punisher movies, or like when, you know, his wife is killed or whatever, it's like a revenge thing. You know, it's all about like the anger and this is like so much more. It was so much more sophisticated and so much more thoughtful. And so I. even though the name, you know, the name makes you think, you know, typical comic book violence, you know, Marvel stuff, that's not what it is. It's dark. It is like kind of dramatic and a little depressing, but man, it's well done. It's really well done. And yeah. I was impressed. I can't believe I've been avoiding that show for so long, but
That's good really to hear, because it's always nice to have a couple seasons to binge watch if you, you know, haven't had any spoilers and somebody finally tips you off. I don't mind that. I don't know mind being in the know if it means that I get like to discover something after three seasons. Like, if you ever met someone that like just discovers something and they get to binge watch like four seasons of it, and you're like, I'm so jealous of you right now. I've been like being spoon fed this show for the past 4 years because I'm a fanatic, and like now like you just get to sit down and just have that bliss.
I remember one time when somebody introduced Firefly to me, and mm-hmm. I was like, wait, Firefly? And they're like, you've never seen Firefly? I'm like, no. And I saw how excited they got. They're like, all right, you know what? You got to finish your drink right now, and you're going to go home, and you're going to go watch it. Like, they were like that certain. And after I saw it, I know what they felt, because if somebody told me they'd never seen Firefly, I would just be like, all right, we're going back to your place or my place. We're getting something to drink. I'm going to watch you watch Firefly. Because I want to see. It is, I mean, it's exciting. You're like, you have no idea what you're missing. I want to give this to you. I want to be there. Like,
so, I want to give this to you. So Jesse, she's not that into a lot of the sci-fi stuff we are. She'll watch it. You know, she's got an open mind. She doesn't get as excited, you know, and some stuff I have to watch in my own time because it's just going to be too nerdy and too sci-fi for her. But we sat down and watched Firefly together, and we binge watched it, but we actually dragged it out because we knew it was the end. It was well over a decade after it had been canceled, and we knew it was never coming back. So we tried to like drag it out a little bit, and we did for a decent amount of time. And at the end of it, it was like she was like completely hooked. Like, I get why there's been people, legions of fans and a cult following saying, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. Just bring it back. Why don't you we just start right now. Just get everyone together and just do it again. Just do it. Just more. And it could have kept going, and it was fantastic. And the fact that, you know, Jesse felt that way about it, it's definitely one of those things where you don't have to be a complete sci-fi nerd. That show kind of had everything.
I know, it's part Western. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, like
it is,
and in a cheesy way, it had everything.
Yeah, it's
but it still was so good. It didn't matter. You got to see past all of that, and then you just wanted to live in that universe. Like,
I know, and there's, it's part Western, it's part sci-fi. It's also like Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of like level of. Sometimes it gets that has kind of that kind of levity, but then it also got really dark and serious sometimes. And then it also introduced all of us to these actors. I mean, Nathan Fillion, who I mean is one of my personal heroes. Like when he's in Castle or when he's in Firefly, like that's who I want to be. I'm like, dude, I want to be just somebody who is like very smart and very serious when it matters. But for the most part, like most of their life, they're just a giant kid. Like,
so
I just love it.
So
real quickly, I'll recommend the new season of Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's not for everyone, I understand. I know a lot of people think it's stupid, but I just think it's one of the funniest things. When I was a kid, I was watching the old one with Joel Hodgson and the new one with Jonah. I just watched two of the new ones, and it's Felicia Day was it Patton Oswalt, Felicia Day. And they've had cameos by Jerry Seinfeld, by Neil Patrick Harris.
Now, when you say cameos, are the cameos in the little things in between, or are they actually making fun of the movie?
Little things in between.
Okay, so they're not taking away from the main characters making fun of the movie.
Yeah, it's just
guest comedians. Okay,
No. It's Tom Servo, Crow, and Jonah watching the movies. But like when they come out of it, these movies are so bad. They're just so fucking bad. I don't know. But I know a lot of I've recommended it to people, and I've had them come back to me and say it's stupid. And so I think I'm in the minority on this one, but I don't care. Like it got released a week and a half ago, and it's
I saw a lot of things for it, and it came up on my Netflix and stuff, and it's just I need to dedicate some time, and I feel like I can't watch that without kicking it with someone.
Do you remember? Remember the when we were younger, there was a movie that was kind of like E.T. and it was called Mac and Me.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is the first new movie that they're doing.
No! All right, I'm watching it. They're doing Mac and Me?
Yes, they're doing Mac and Me.
Watch that. All right, so do you know about how Paul Rudd has been gagging Conan O'Brien for years with that scene from Mac and Me?
Yep.
And he hasn't actually shown a real clip of any of his movies. And I think once Judd Apatow showed up to the Conan O'Brien show and made him do it, and I think they still, like, snuck it in and stuff and messed with him. And it's all like, no, he's not allowed to do it. And Conan doesn't even look that amused anymore because he knows he's told his staff not to do it, and they're not supposed to do it. And every time Paul Rudd, the most charming, amazing man in Hollywood that everybody loves, will convince his staff to do it again, like, come on, just one more time. That's like the best, like, longest running gag in, like, late night shows ever. And maybe I'm just biased because I feel like Conan's the best. Next to now Stephen Colbert, he's going to be a new god in late night TV, I hope, just for me. I hope he outshines Jimmy Fallon, and we all just remember him as a dark time in late night comedy.
Fuck Jimmy Fallon. Just whatever.
And he's become likable, and he has a few good bits and stuff. And I mean,
it's all music related. Like he gets his guests to sing. Like that is so much of what he does.
He gets them to do fun things because they have a good writer, and they picked like one of the coolest house bands you could have.
Yeah.
I mean, like there's a lot of awesome things going on, which I don't think it's Jimmy Fallon, and just reluctantly he's eased into his role, and every once in a while.
I don't know. What do you got going on this weekend coming up?
We got my friend's birthday, so we're gonna go out for oysters and pizza, and then go dancing at this club, this new club in Denver called Temple. The lighting is so ridiculous; people say that it looks like the club from Tron. I think they're exaggerating, but it kind of does if you got blurred eyes. and you should have
blurry eyes.
this Russian G House / Bass House duo Volak are playing, and they are the shit. I'm all about their music. I've been jamming out to it for months now, and I'm pumped to go see them play. And we're celebrating my friend's 30th birthday. And he seems like he's having a tougher time with it than any of us did when we turned 30. So I don't know. Not really a tough time, but,
not happy about it.
Yeah. I don't think any of us were really happy about it, but I don't think we verbalized it. And he's all like, yeah, I guess I'm fucking turning 30. It's like, yeah, it's cool. Right. You know, I mean, it was going to happen.
Yeah, you did plan on living this long, right?
Yeah. Dude, oh my god, if he says anything negative, I'm going to say that to him. Thank you. Thank you. I got a line. I have a line. He didn't plan on living this long, right? I'll say it in front of his wife, too. It's going to be great. but yeah, we're going to have pizza, oysters, and then go dance to some like banging ass house music. Go check out Volak. They're badass. Like G House is this fucking mixture of like really hard bass house, with like almost like a 90s gangster rap feel.
How do you spell it?
Like the letter G and then house, like the house you live in.
No, I mean the Volak.
Oh, Volak. Volac.
All right, and then what was the name of the act that you were telling me about that you saw at the golf course that is like a kind of a dark, like a more of a heavier bass, kind of more of a Trent Reznor?
Oh, we saw it at Red Rocks. Rez, R-E-Z-Z. Listen to Rez, man. I've been trying to tell you for a while. R-E-Z-Z. Rez is fantastic. It is really good.
All right, and then I guess movie-wise, we did see Deadpool 2, but we don't have time to, like, really... I mean, it's 4 months, 5 months, 6 months ago, but who the fuck cares? We might talk about it next time.
We just happened to watch it the exact same time.
Yeah, I know. That was weird. Afterwards.
It was really weird. We did not... I mean, it's such an old movie. We weren't like, hey, we should watch Deadpool this weekend and podcast about it. It was, like, completely random. We both got to a part of laziness where it's like, oh, I haven't even seen it yet. You either? And we just happened to. Yeah. It was the after Thanksgiving boredom, you know, like we were, just laying back.
So this, I don't know, I think this weekend I might go see, I still haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody. Every time I go to see it, something comes up and fucks up my plan. But if it's not that one, I might go see Mary, Queen of Scots, which has Saoirse Ronan and Margot Robbie as
Yeah, that looks pretty legit.
That looks cool.
Seriously.
I love that. I love period pieces. I can't
help it. No, well, I mean, there's the most interesting times in history almost are like when like women were like dominating large kingdoms and just like really influential, like whether you're talking about Cleopatra or old Queen Elizabeth or just so many just amazing times in history were just like, you know, the whole nation was led by a woman and what happened that was like different and interesting and powerful. And how they like, you know, retained power. And, it's just fantastic.
Well, this stuff, a lot of these some of these stories inspired George R. R. Martin. So it's like some of these things you can draw direct parallels to like this stuff from European history straight to something that happened.
Are these the War of the Roses?
No, this is after War of the Roses. But like a lot of these stories of the monarchy, because I mean, Westeros is basically England. But he takes a lot of stories and a lot of things from medieval history of England, of Ireland, of France, and uses them, incorporates them into, you know, a story of a fantasyful world with dragons and all sorts of shit. But operations, the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, and like some of the other kind of great stories of, you know, the drama of the kings and queens of Europe and England and. I think that's enough of wasting your time on making expressions. We are going to head out and still don't have a good finish or close. Unless you got one, John. You got an idea of how we should gracefully walk away from this show?